I'm your host, Aaron Ripmaster. Welcome to the Man Cave, where joining me tonight to record Diz Dad's podcast number 288 are David Jewart,
RIP Team Bacon's Amusement Park,
and Justin West.
Hello, fellow beer drinkers.
And Don Donfris.
Hello, everybody.
So tonight, we're going to make it an even six-pack of beer casts as I hand the reins back to our resident Diz Dad's beer nerd, David Jewart, who has once again curated an excellent menu of beery goodness for us to sample this evening and talk about for a while. But before I do that, I want to thank our podcast sponsor, Fairytale Journeys, an authorized Disney travel planner. The next time you're considering a family vacation to a themed entertainment destination like Disneyland, Walt Disney World, on the Disney Cruise Line, Universal Hollywood, all those great family fun entertainment destinations, consider planning your vacation with a Fairytale Journeys travel agent. They would love to take the stress, the headaches, the confusing stuff about these tremendously busy, lots of things going on, entertainment destinations, cut through the crazy, and let you focus on the fun. You can check them out at fairytalejourneys.com. Okay, Dave, so it's your show. You get
No,
us,
it's not.
Well, sort of. So you've given us this time, you know, we're turning to summer, right? It's late April, and we're looking ahead to the kind of beers that we're going to enjoy as the weather gets warm.
Yeah, no, it's... It's getting into spring here. Food and wine light. Flower and garden festival is right.
Flower and wine.
Flower and garden. Beer and flowers festival is kind of in full swing now. So let's talk summer beers. Let's talk what's good to have in the really hot, you know, late spring, early summer, beers that you can get at home. Everything here is pretty accessible, for, you know, when you're working outside and you need a refreshing beverage. Sure. So we're going to go today, I guess. Do you want to go through the three, or do you want me to go through all of them and kind of...
Why don't we just kind of get them as we go there? I mean, the first couple here are basically variations on a theme. So why don't we start with that? A couple of different sort of versions of wheat beers. So why don't you go ahead and introduce the beer that we're going to start off with as I crack mine open.
Yeah, Hoegaarden. We're going to look at both your major styles of wheat beers today, your wit beers and your Weiss beers, specifically Hefeweizens. But we're going to start with Hoegaarden, which is a wit beer. It's the classic wit beer. Started in Hoegaarden. old brewery. There were 8 or 9 breweries in Hoegaarden in Belgium.
I'm going to interrupt you here because I'm pouring my beer, and I understand there are some instructions I'm supposed to follow.
As one Justin West always appreciates, there are instructions on the bottle. So we're going to back up here. If you turn your bottle around, on the right, there are 4 squares. First, you are to freeze the glass, which I don't think any of us did. But whatever. We'll just pretend.
I froze the bottle.
Did you freeze the bottle?
I needed a fast cool.
Right, exactly. Nice. So,
and he lives in Chicago and had to drive home, so.
Exactly. Man. Wait. Is that before or after he – I don't want to know. I don't want to know. But with Hoegaarden, they kind of tell you to pour 2/3 of the beer into your glass. It's not supposed to be a pint glass. It is supposed to be a hexagonal glass. So you're maybe octagonal, I forget. But at any rate, it has the 6 or 8 sides on it. 2/3 into the glass, then swirl the bottle, and then finish pouring the beer, which will be mainly head at that point, but it'll be nice and thick and frothy. It's going to pour a golden yellow, nice and hazy. That's from the wheat or from the wheat and from some of the yeast that is left in the bottle. Nice, big, thick, white head. Dissipates rather quickly to a little film. But what you're going to get here is, and as a style, wit beers, obviously there's wheat involved. So there's a certain percentage of wheat that is acceptable within the style. It's, I want to say it's a third to just over a half. But is opposed to what we're going to get into next with the Hefeweizens. Besides the wheat ratio being slightly different, and the actual yeast strain being different, with Hoegaarden and other wit beers, they're going to add some spices into this. They're going to add coriander. They're going to add orange peel. Depending on what it is, it'll be like standard Curacao orange peels or some bitter ones. Like, so it actually dates back to when people used to make gruits, which was a spiced alcoholic beverage, usually a malted base. Then they would add all these spices, juniper berries, all kinds of weird stuff. So it's kind of a take on that.
Okay.
But it's not as heavily spiced. So what you're going to get flavor-wise, it's going to be nice and light. You're going to have obviously some orange, some coriander. It's going to be spicy and sweet, kind of dry, pretty mellow, but you're going to have that nice big wheat flavor. So it's going to be bready, biscuity, and refreshing. All so right. Do you want to go around?
Yeah, let's get some impressions here. All of us, I think, have been sipping along as Dave's been talking. So, Justin, why don't you start us off? You at least almost followed the directions. You froze up your bottle. So what are the flavors that you're getting from this, the Hoegaarden?
It's a light spice. This one's not real heavy spice to me, but it does have that kind of, I don't know, bready. It's real light. This beer is real light, easy drink. A little bit of a hint of a floral note to it. But real good. I'll be enjoying some of these in the warm summer months.
Okay. And Don, how about you? What do you think of it?
I like it a lot. It's really smooth, light. I can get a little bit of the citrus out of it. Really easy on the palate. I mean, it's not jarring or anything like that. This is a nice refreshing beer, but it's pretty mellow, so it'd go with pretty much anything because it's not going to overpower anything.
I would agree. I mean, I think it would definitely be a good, you know, at the cookout beer, or you know, with just about any meal, because even if you're talking anything from, you know, burgers and dogs to, you know, lighter summer stuff, it's not going to overpower food. It's going to play along with it.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm enjoying it quite a bit. I like that little hint almost of a citrus note that's in there already. I know that the American Bar Service of Hoegaarden tends to, you know, throw orange in there or something along those lines. I prefer my beer non-fruited.
But, agreed.
But I could, you know, it does make a certain amount of sense. I mean, that acid does go well. I'd just rather, you know, eat something that had the acid in it with the beer. But I like the flavors a lot. I will admit, I find that I'm not a big fan of the nose of this beer.
A little funky. Smells like garbage.
Yeah.
Yeah. My wife has called this and any Hefeweizen she smells garbage beer for a long time. until she found Francis Connor, and now she drinks it. Like, not a lot, but it's one of her go-tos.
Okay.
But she still calls it garbage beer. Just because of the nose. It is funky. It's it's maybe not necessarily off-putting, but it's not inviting.
Well, and what's odd about it to me is there are a friend of mine brews, and he brews a lot of different saisons that are really strong saisons.
Mm-hmm.
And I can almost smell the beginning of a saison in this.
It's very similar.
But it, like, doesn't quite get there, so it like, smells undone.
Right. No, it's,
and I think it's just because I've got that sense memory, but...
Well, it's actually a good tie-in. They're similar styles. They're not the same because of the yeast that's used or the other fermentation bugs that are in a saison.
Okay.
So it's not going to be as dry. There's going to be more wheat malt in this as opposed to a saison, but it's going to be close. You're coming from Belgium. You know, they all kind of have the same flavor palette there, and saison takes it one more step to that really dry farmhouse ale. And I get what you're I get what you're saying, because it is like a much fuller bodied, well, saisons are full bodied, but a it hasn't attenuated out as much. It's not as dry.
And you don't the saison tends to have a more of a sort of a pronounced sour note in the smell.
Mm-hmm.
That's not there in the Hoegaarden.
Right. Yeah, agreed.
And we should mention that this is a beer you can find at Walt Disney World. It's not as widely available as a lot of the ones that we've talked about before, but there are a couple of places you'll find it. It's a Belgian beer, so when Belgium has a pavilion at the Food and Wine Festival in the fall, as they often do, you'll find it there. The other place that you'll find Hoegaarden is on the regular menu at Be Our Guest Restaurant in the Magic Kingdom. Dinner only.
Now, with that
which
said...
Which is a real shame, because, you know, now that they're serving breakfast, I mean, this would be a good breakfast beer.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
Oh, you know, could you imagine the arms that would be thrown about that?
You know, it... I still don't understand why they don't serve alcohol at lunch there, but whatever. Along with that, though, Aaron, you know, you can get Shock Top everywhere, which is modeled after this. Same with Blue Moon. A lot of those, you know, the wits. I think Allagash has a Allagash White, which is a wit beer. There's a lot of styles out there. There's a lot of styles locally out there. And this, along with the next one, the fresher you get it, the better it is. The more pronounced the flavors are, because the way the chemistry, you know, plays out, there's the phenols that create a lot of these, and some of the esters that are in there, they break down very quickly. So the longer they're in the bottle, the longer you have them. They're gone. Whereas with IPAs, it's very similar to with the hop notes, the hop flavor.
Right.
That can
well,
go
we
real quick.
We talked about that
right.
Back when we talked about the big flavor, big mm-hmm. hoppy beers. That
right.
You know, that's part of the sort of the DNA of an IPA.
Right.
to throw more letters in the alphabet soup.
Yeah.
But you know, it was designed to be a long lasting, you know, could handle transport, all those kinds of things. Beer. This is just a little more delicate product.
Right. Yes, sir. So don't. Even though Hoegaarden's only available at a couple places at Disney, A, it's available absolutely everywhere, and B, there's a ton of other examples out there, so don't be afraid to try those.
Right, and yeah, we should mention that one of the reasons we chose the Hoegaarden is that, you know, being that Belgian wit beer, it's sort of, you know, one of those. You know, in cooking terms, they've got mother sauces, right?
Right.
The bases that everything else is based from. Mm-hmm. This is sort of one of the mother beers, you know,
a
Belgian wit beer. And there are a lot of them all around at Walt Disney World. And David's point about, you know, just the fresher the better, you know, look for that microbrew option where, you know, they're just not making enough of it that it can have been sitting around for that long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, locally, some of the best ones I've had have been at brew pubs because it's fresh. They've made it in smaller batches, and it does, like you said, it doesn't stick around long. So they're always turning it over. So,
right. All right. Well, let's go ahead and move on to the next one, which is also sort of a variation on a theme, another type of wheat-based beer.
Yeah, so if that was the Belgian wit, this is the Bavarian or German wheat beer. This is your Hefeweizen. And we talked about getting the Weinheimstefaner, which the oldest brewery in the world. And that's faux show. But it's also kind of the when you say mothership, it is the standard. It's the highest rated in the world. It is that for a reason. Now, whenever I put this out there, I had said to everyone, if you can find something local, grab it. And the reason being, much more so with this beer as opposed to the wit beer, the German wheats, they follow the Reinheitsgebot, which is German purity laws. It's the fact that the only thing that go into beer originally was water, barley, and hops, because they didn't know what yeast was, but then they added that eventually. So those are the only four ingredients that can go into beer in Germany. Okay. All right, if you're following German purity laws, which that's all this is. The reason you get the flavor profile, which you do, there's the esters and the phenols that I was talking about earlier, right, are especially prominent in this. You will get a big nose and flavor of banana and clove. And there's no banana and no clove put into it. It is all what the yeast produces. If you're to brew this at home, you want to get Y-Yeast 3068. I still remember this. That's the strain. That is this specific strain of yeast. I'm pretty sure it's 3068. But anywho, those go away pretty darn quick when it goes into a bottle. So I kind of put it out there that if you can find something local, if you can get a growler or something from a local brewery, grab that, because it'll really showcase those banana and clove notes. So again, it's a wheat beer. It's a little darker in color than the wit beer. The head is much more pillowy. It sticks around a little longer. It has those noses. And Aaron, do you still get the fun garbage notes?
Yeah, I do. It's not as pronounced in this one, and I should note, and we'll talk about this in a minute. I ended up with an alternative, a Widmer Brothers Hefeweizen. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because, you know, as you're describing, I'm seeing much the same thing that you're describing from the, I'm going to try and say it, Weinstefaner?
Yeah, Weinstefaner.
Weinstefaner.
Yep.
I'm seeing much the same thing that you're talking about with the Weinstefaner, even though, you know, it's a completely different beer. I mean, the Weinstefaner is German brewed, and the Widmer Brothers is specifically, you know, an American Hefeweizen.
Yep.
So they don't even pretend.
Well, I mean, I'm sitting here drinking Franziskaner, and it's again another German Weiss beer. So it's the other two that have the granddaddy
that,
of them all
that have the assigned beer.
Yeah, that actually listen to the rules.
And we prepared ahead. Well, I don't know if Dave did or if Justin did, but I actually bought it a few days ago. So.
Okay, so nice. I had this Passover thing going on.
Okay.
Yeah. You get it today.
Anyway, why don't we let Justin start or Don start with tasting notes this time, since he's got the Weinstefaner or whatever. I said it close.
That was good.
Enough.
You were good. Yeah.
Okay. Weinstefaner. Don's got that one in his hand, and you know, you've kind of given us a basic description. So, Don, what are you tasting out of that?
Again, it's like I got a little bit of the fruit out of it, and the banana. It's funny how you say that, because I didn't realize it until you were saying it, that's kind of the taste I'm getting out of it. I mean, it's not heavy, but when you start thinking about it, it's like, oh yeah, that's what that is.
The other one's bubble gum. Think bubble gum.
Okay. I don't chew bubble gum as much anymore, so. again, it's a lighter, not overpowering. It's got a little bit more heavier notes than the Hoegaarden, but it's still a very light and refreshing beer. I think it would be really good, really ice cold on a nice summer evening. I think this one will play well as well.
Okay. And how about you, Justin? What's your take on the Weihenstephaner?
In comparison to the Hoegaarden, however we say that, those spice notes were much more subtle. The clove, banana-ish flavor stands out a little more. It's still not a heavy beer, and it's not, you know, it's not hoppy or anything. It's not. It's easy on the taste buds. When I poured mine, I had like a four-finger head on the thing, so it was like chomping through some marshmallow cream or something to get to the actual beer. But it's good. I was able to find it in a single 16-ounce bottle at my local store, so we'll be enjoying all of this here rather quickly before we get to the bells. But
nice.
But no, it's pleasant. This one to me doesn't see. I don't get the real citrusy notes out of this one. This is more on the bread side of things, if you will. It's good beer.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, like I said, I'm drinking this American Hefeweizen, the Widmer Brothers, and I'm noticing a lot of similarities. I do get that sort of background banana flavor. And the color description, it's definitely that kind of cloudy amber, maybe a bit richer amber than the Hoegaarden was. I think the flavor on this one is terrific, and I would agree with Don. You know, get it really, really good and cold, and it's a great just kind of kick back and you know, sipping beer kind of thing. And also, again, the spice notes in the Widmer Brothers are not as strong. I think that would maybe lend itself to, you know, being a beer with dinner better than the spicier one might, but that's a, you know, that's a personal flavor preference thing more than anything else,
right?
I'm sorry. Before we go, I want to remember to let people know the one. I get it a couple of times and then I stumble again. The Weihenstephaner. Can be found at Walt Disney World at Todd English's Blue Zoo. It's the only place I'm seeing it, come up on any of my searches. But it is available on property there, and it's kind of an interesting location if you haven't been there before. And the Widmer is you could find at ESPN Club on Disney's Boardwalk. Interestingly, the Widmer Brothers is much more widely available at Disneyland. It's at the PCH Grill at Paradise Pier Hotel. It's at the Hearthstone Lounge at the Grand Californian. It's, frankly, it's just about anywhere at the Grand Californian you'll probably find it. It's at Storytellers. It's at the Wine Country Trattoria at DCA. So it's a little more broadly available, and it's also one that's been known to show up at Food and Wine Festival at the Craft Beers, one of those pavilions.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing is they do have, and I'm looking for it now, but at the Germany Pavilion, they do have a Hefeweizen there.
Yeah, I was actually starting to look for the same thing, and got sidetracked.
I know I looked at it, And I'm looking here. They have the Schaffenhofer. The Schaffenhofer.
Oh, Schaffenhofer, yeah.
Yeah. So they have that. Also, they have the grapefruit, which I think is half grapefruit juice and half Weizen. I'm pretty sure.
It's more grapefruit soda.
I'm pretty sure it is, yeah.
Yeah, opinion on that one is pretty widely divided among the Diz Dads gang, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Our big flavor guys here, Justin and Dave, are not such fans. You know, I enjoy it. I'm not sure what Don's take on it is.
I don't know if I've had that one. I've had a grapefruit beer, Jesus, a couple months ago. It was at a party. And it wasn't bad. I mean, it was, yeah, I don't know that I would go out of my way to get it. But if I were someplace, like at a party, and they had some, I might have one. I don't know that I would actually, I got it someplace on my phone, what I had, but I can't remember what it was exactly, which one.
Well, not to get too far off, but the Schaffenhofer, I call that a good breakfast starter beer. If you're going to start on the golf course at 8 o'clock in the morning, that's not a bad one to start with.
Well, actually, that's a good point. And you know, again, we're wandering far afield, but, you know, that Schaffenhofer grapefruit beer, it's only like 3% or 2% alcohol.
It is a straight 50% mix of the Schaffenhofer Hefe and 50% grapefruit juice.
Really?
So, yeah. I'm looking here. It's on the bottle. I knew on the bottle, but I found it on Beers and Ears.
Okay.
It's basically a grapefruit shandy.
Uh-huh.
Okay? So it fits into this, but I think one of the reasons I don't like it is I don't like grapefruit that much,
sure.
Especially something that's that powerful.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is a mix with the Hefe, so.
All right. Well, that's the Hefeweizen that they have available both at the cart outside and at Beer Garden.
Yes. Yes. They usually, I guess what Beer Garden usually has, a Dunkel. They have the standard Pilsner, and they always have a Hefe. I don't know.
Now, their menu is apparently in a little bit of flux at the moment. We've been following that very closely because it appears that Herval's is gone. And has been replaced.
With?
Okay, Justin, right, do you remember what, because Scott Stratman is there this week.
And, I'm scrolling through it right now. Versteiner Dunkel. That's a winner.
Yeah.
And he was saying it was very good. It was a worthy replacement.
Oh, Versteiner Dunkel's fantastic, I'm telling you. Find it at home. You can.
All right, we're wandering way off again now.
Now let's get it back.
Now we've gone from Whitbeer to Dunkel. So
yeah, that's the Oktoberfest show.
Yeah,
we'll get there.
So Dave, why don't you talk about the Whitbeer that you found? It's not one that's readily available at Walt Disney World, but it's sort of a classic example of the form.
Right. I actually went and thought that I'd be able to get the Van Heinstefaner. But I couldn't, so I went with Francis Connor, which is, again, it's a very good example of it. It's a German version. It's widely available outside of the world. But it very closely follows what everyone has said about their beers. Aaron, it seems like yours is a little darker than the rest of ours. You know, and just a little... A little background here on the whole style. We had the Witbier and the Weissbier. So the Witbier is Belgian, the Weissbier is German, and that's classified as it's translation wheat beer, not hard. Right. Hefeweizen translates literally as yeast wheat beer. So it's an unfiltered wheat beer. It's 50% or more wheat in the mash at the beginning. It uses specific yeasts, and that's why you get those banana and clove flavors. And I know I said it before, if you can get it fresh, don't be afraid when you go to a micro anywhere to try it. I know there's one in Pittsburgh. It's the Hofbrauhaus. I don't know if you guys – there's several throughout the U.S. I don't know if there's anything near Chicago or in or in Kansas City.
There is one in Chicago for sure.
Have you been?
Yes, I have. I can't remember. I was.
Yeah, sorry.
It's a brewery. We're not surprised you don't remember.
It's probably some of the best stuff because they make everything there. But it is, you know, classic standard German Hofbräuhaus from Munich, but they brew it in the States now. These are kind of dotting all over. But at any rate, hands down, the best Hefeweizen. If you're ever around one, do it. But the other big thing I want to hit on, the Weihenstephaner, don't take it lightly. They've been around for over 1,000 years. It's the oldest brewery in the world. To say you've been around for 1,000 years is ridiculous.
Yeah, it is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
That's crazy. But seek it out at the world. Seek it out around your house. These are two varying styles. I know if you look at a lot of the marketing stuff, you see your Shock Tops, you see your Blue Moons. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, if you're into, you know, reading people's reviews and or just, you know, average scores and everything, the Hoegaarden on Beer Advocate's an 85. The Weihenstephaner is a 100.
Yeah, per style, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've had it, a Hefeweizen at Gordon Biersch.
Mm-hmm.
And theirs is pretty good.
Well, they do. Yeah. They do a Hefe at the Gordon Biersch. What is it, Big River, right?
Yeah, yeah.
There's several. Yeah,
the Big
Gordon
River.
Biersch.
Yeah, but there's a Big River, there at Walt Disney World.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, that does a Hefe.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if the Orlando Hefe is available. They kind of took that away, a lot of the Orlando brewing stuff, right?
You may still find it if you're looking for it. The place you're most likely to find it is the Wave,
right?
Because they still have that Orlando Brewing Company organic beer flight,
right?
And so, if it's still available on property, that's where you'll find it.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, around here, Boulevard is the big name in town, and their unfiltered wheat, which is essentially an American version of this, you know, the Hefeweizen, became sort of their signature beer around here. It's on almost every tap all over the place around here.
Well, that's what put them on the map, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I remember when Boulevard was first coming out, you know, the beer that was sort of their signature beer for a while was their Boulevard Pale Ale. And then, you know, I was out of town for a few years, live in other places, came back, and all of a sudden they were still selling the Pale Ale, but the Boulevard Unfiltered Wheat was, you know, had become the signature beer.
I know when I was running around St. Louis, Kansas, back in a previous job life, that's all that was everywhere. Like you said, it was literally on tap everywhere you went. It was the one local that they had.
Yeah, and I think it speaks to, you know, just like all of us have been saying, it's you're going to find it anywhere. It's that easy drinking style that is great with just about any meal, you know, because it's going to blend and not overpower. It's mm-hmm. it's, you know, it's got, it's not water, right? I mean, it's not Busch Light. It's got flavor to it, but it's not mm-hmm. overpowering flavor, and it doesn't have a flavor that really lingers on your palate.
Well, it falls squarely into gateway beer territory.
Yeah.
Both of these do that we've had so far. So I mean, it's I know.
Yeah. See, now the problem with it is a gateway beer. I agree, taste wise, I think you do have that issue with the nose of it as a gateway beer.
Yeah. You got to get past it. I agree. I agree. I think that and I haven't had Boulevard Wheat in a long time. It's not as bad.
No, you're right. It's not.
In the nose?
No.
I don't know what they do to it. They probably filter. I mean, it's unfiltered, but it's probably filtered in some capacity. Anyway, no, I Blue Moon's always been a gateway beer, right? Which is beer. So it's
And if you ask me, that's the real reason that American bars put fruit in wheat beers because it covers the smell.
Right.
It smells citrus instead.
Yep. Agreed. So are we weeded out?
I think we're weeded out. I think we're ready to move to the flavor bomb.
Hey, Justin.
Yeah.
This is by far my favorite IPA.
This one?
That is extremely accessible.
I had a nice tall glass of it the other night at Buffalo Wild Wings while watching the national championship game.
I saw that on the tweeters. Or the Facebook, one or the other. But we are we're going to try from one of my favorite breweries, Bell's, in Kalamazoo, Michigan. We're going to try Two Hearted Ale. And by try, I mean drink again. This used to be my go-to IPA. We've been down the IPA road before, so we don't have to go too deep into it. I don't know if anyone happened to be on Facebook earlier when I posted a magazine. It was called Pace Magazine, I believe. They did a blind taste test of 116 IPAs, which you want to talk about palate fatigue. Holy crap.
Yeah, I happened to see that one, too. And I'm not even sure it was your tweet, but I saw it today.
It was all over the place.
Tweet, or is that a Facebook?
It was on Facebook. I just reached
out. I got to follow you or something because I didn't see that. That's cool.
Yeah, you know, you see a lot of these out there. It's the best 100 beers and blah, 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 blah. And about one in every 10 is legitimate. Like, they've actually done their homework. This one, they sent out requests to a ton of breweries, and people sent them free samples. They had actual brewers, bar owners, bottle shop owners, beer writers do all of the blind tastings. They did flights of 10, up two from each of those flights, and did a massive 25 beer final flight to do the top 25. It was absolutely amazing, some of the results. And the only reason we're going into this is because in a blind taste test through all these judges up against the likes of Blind Pig, which is from Russian River, up against what I think, I don't know if anyone's ever been to Minnesota, but Town Hall Brewing is a little brew pub up there. Their Masala Mama is out of this world. This came in 10th overall, right? Was it 15, Justin? I think it was 15. Still, top 15 out of 115.
I read it. I saw that it was in the rank. Yeah, it was somewhere it was fairly high. And to me, Bell's is very easy to find here.
Yeah, I know, Aaron, you said you had.
Well, so here's the thing. This is the curse, right, of people who enjoy craft beer and like talking about craft beer.
Right.
Because and it's the particular curse of those of us who, you know, live near a state line. I suspect that the dads who are listening who live in places like Philadelphia and New Jersey, you know, have a similar issue. And that is that I totally spaced the fact that I had figured I learned last time, because I believe on our first beer cast we tasted another Bell's product.
Yeah, Oberon.
Right, exactly. Yeah, the Oberon.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned then that for whatever reason there is no Bell's distribution on the Kansas side of the state line, which is where I live. And so, you know, I managed to find the Oberon. I had enough time. I could go to a place other than my usual liquor store and get the Oberon. This time, this was a crazy week. I didn't have a chance. So I stopped at my usual place and they didn't have it. And I pulled up the, you know, web browser on my phone and pulled up Bell's website and did a search. And yeah, there were lots of places where I could get, Bell Two Hearted Ale. None of them in Kansas.
Yeah. Kansas is where beer goes to die.
Except that we've got Boulevard.
Except you have Boulevard.
And I found the Widmer and the Hoo Garden. And, you know, I mean, I found lots of stuff. I just didn't find any bells.
The only thing by us they had with the two-hearted was the cans.
Oh, there you go.
That's fantastic.
And then they had the bottles.
That's so good in cans.
It was really good.
I had the option of either. I took the cans.
Yeah, I didn't have the option. If I had cans, I'd do it. Heck, Founders, the fact that Founders is now canning has made my life so much better. They had all-day IPA for $25 a case here. It was insane. Any rate, I'm backing up, getting back on the Bell's train.
Okay.
So Bell's Two Hearted has been really close to my heart for a very long time. It is strictly hopped with Centennial hops, which gives it a really citrusy, florally nose. Same with the flavor. Centennial is notoriously bitter when it comes to alpha acid content. It's solid. It is hitch up front. You get a nice kind of muted middle and a decently lingering bitter after. It's a little orangey, a little hazy, kind of effervescent, really, really thick, pillowy head that laces well on the glass. The nose is, like I said, a lot of citrus, a lot of flower, a little bit of that kind of like piney note, so you get a little bit of an English kind of nose to it, but flavor-wise, it gets right back into that citrus and floral. And it's absolutely yummy and scary, scary quaffable. Justin, do you attest to this? I do, and only because in 2009, the Steelers Super Bowl win is hazy. And it was due to Two Hearted. And I remember when Santonio Holmes caught the pass in the corner of the end zone, I jumped up in the air. My buddy body checked me, and I was horizontal real quick. But I blame Bell's.
Who am I to say that our beer expert is wrong? No, I like flavor. I like a lot of flavor, and IPAs can hit me really spot on or really turn me off.
Right.
And this is an IPA that I like. I do like the IPA that has the citrus come through the grapefruit or whatever. It's not overpowerful with the pine flavor, which is one of the reasons I don't love Lagunitas. Mm-hmm. So this is one of the easiest IPAs for me to drink that I've found. It's got a real nice copper color to it, and it goes down real easy for something that has this much flavor.
Oh yeah. It's scary good.
So how about you, Don? You enjoying it as well?
I gotta say, I really agree. I very much so. Sometimes, like Justin said, some IPAs are just a little too much. You know, I think sometimes some of these guys, let's just make it powerful, make it and some of them are to me almost like too harsh. Mm-hmm. I got to really be in a mood for some one of those harsh ones, when one friend really loves Three Floyds,
right? And
they always have when they always have a Memorial Day party, and they get all the different two or three different Three Floyds, but those are pretty rough,
Well, let's stop you there. You grab three or four of those and put them in a box. I'll get you my address.
Speaking of things you can't get in Pennsylvania.
Yes, continue. Don, yeah, have you had this
before? He usually gets a case of each.
Nice.
The Two Hearted? No. I opened this up and I had this and I was like, wow, this is definitely the best IPA I've ever had. Because it gives you... it gives you a lot of the IPA flavor without killing you with some of the hoppiness, and you do get some of those other tones to it, and the, you know, I like that it's not real piney, and it does have some of the citrus, and it's smooth. You know, again, some of the IPAs, they're just rough going down. You know, I mean, you get a lot of flavor out of them, but they're not. It's not something you want to. I don't like to drink all night because it's just. It's just a little too much.
Well, it hurts. I mean, it really does. The thing about IPAs is that you have to go for balance. There was a huge push, and Don kind of hit on it, that there was a huge push about, I don't know, 5 years ago to make everything bigger, better, bitterer, and awesomer in their eyes. It was like, our beer has 275 IBUs of bitterness in it. And that's great and all, except for the human palate can't taste anything over 100. So all you did was waste a lot of money on hops for a gimmick. But Don, like you said, it's smooth. We've all kind of gone down that road. Balance is key. It's a nice caramel malt backbone to it, and it punches you in the face, but it's kind of like it's kind of like that slap that your buddy gives, just like, hey man, how you doing?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I get the, it. It's
the friendly slap on the shoulder, not the one that separates it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, it gives you ahead. That IPA. It gives you that IPA punch, but it doesn't kill you with it. You know, it's very drinkable. It's very, I mean, I could see having a few of these at night, and, you know, cause a lot of times when I'm at that other party and I have those three Floyds, it's like, I'll have one. Yeah, I got to find something else. Cause these are just getting, you know, after a few of them, they're just too rough going down. You know, it's not even enjoyable, you know, to me, it's not, at least. So.
Yeah. Now, as I mentioned, I was not able to get my hands on the Bells Too Hearted this time around. My alternative, I grabbed a local. I went with the Boulevard Single Wide IPA. And it's interesting to me because it sounds like it's a very, very similar flavor profile. You know, I can't compare them head-to-head because I'm not tasting the Too Hearted, but, you know, listening to the descriptions, I'm getting a sense that they're very similar. The Two Hearted's probably got a little bit of a stronger punch. The sort of, you know, hop kick for the single white IPA, it's there, but it's a little more subtle. I'm getting it more in the aftertaste than I am in the original drink. But it's got that same, you know, caramel backbone, that same sort of caramely color. And, you know, I enjoy it because it's got that really good full-bodied flavor without being overwhelming, which is very similar to what you're describing.
Yeah, it's Boulevard does good stuff overall to begin with. I don't know if I've ever had a Boulevard IPA, which – come about July, we're going to have to figure out how to do a Boulevard Tank 7 beer cast, because it's at Disney now.
That's true, it is. And there are several of us that will be around in June, so maybe we can record a segment in June while we sit around and enjoy Tank 7 together.
Three of four, Justin, make a trip. I know a guy you can call.
Oh, if only I could.
David, are you going to be down there then?
Yeah, man. You're there for what, cheerleading, right? Or softball?
Volleyball.
You're there for volleyball. Aaron's in
pre-Diz Dad's cruise,
and I'm on family vacation, so I'm pretty sure that's going to happen.
You know, we can. I would bet that Justin could find some Tank 7 in Chicago, and, you know,
I certainly can.
Yeah, so we can always conference call him in while we're sitting in a bar at Walt Disney World.
Oh, this is going to be awesome! Yeah. Yes, this has to happen.
Here's a great concept for the downtown, whatever, the new downtown area.
Downtown Disney Springs, Disney.
Yeah, Disney Springs. It was slipping the brain, the concept.
Mm-hmm.
A craft beer restaurant. more so than I know they got some of that stuff with some of the other ones.
Because I'm just kind of looking here, and one of the places that you can find the Bell's Two Hearted Ale at Walt Disney World, and there are only a couple. One of them is at Raglan Road in downtown Disney, which frankly has a pretty good craft beer selection. A lot of it on tap. You know, a pretty impressive selection. So if you're looking for craft beers in downtown Disney, that's a great choice. You could also find the Bell's Two Hearted Ale at the Cabana Bar and Beach Club at the Dolphin. But those are the only two places that are listing it. You know, you may find it other places. You can certainly ask. It does seem that they're rotating the microbrews that show up on the bar menus a little bit more frequently than they used to.
I would, just to add, I would keep an eye on Block and Hans because they always have something from Bell's there, whether it's Oberon, which they can't get all year long.
Right.
I know they put something in there, and I don't know if I saw somewhere that it was two-hearted. I would think that it would be – it's a natural for them to go to because two-hearted is made all year. I'm surprised Disney hasn't picked it up if they're going to stick with the Bell's thing. But for something similar, when you're there, and I know I've written about it, and I know I've probably talked about it about 600 times, Cigar City Hi-Li.
Yeah, and it's another one that in that taste test that you were just talking about scored very well.
It got it was like 8.
Yeah,
it's awesome. It is really good. I luckily BS'd my way into a 6-pack or so of it from my father, who just came back from wintering in Florida. So, yeah. Seek it out. Anyway, what? Two-hearted, though, it's east of the Mississippi for sure. Pretty much everywhere, right, Justin? I know Bell's has really
pushed everywhere. Bell's is easily accessible to me, but I'm only 40 minutes from Michigan. So
I was going
to
say, you're like 8 minutes from Kalamazoo and 4 minutes from Three Floyds. So, but, I mean, it's. I know it's in Missouri for sure. We know that because Aaron said. I know it's the whole way out here. I know it's the whole way in Florida. And I'm pretty sure it gets up into New England. I'm sure Tim can let us know on that one. But it's worth seeking out. So even if it is limited at Disney, it's definitely worth seeking out.
Sure. Good point. And that's true of a lot of these that, you know, even if you're not going to find it at Disney, it's worth finding around home and tasting something different. You know, I would encourage people, if you can find the – and that this is the thing about the Boulevard stuff, right? I mean, the Tank 7, it has started to get really broad distribution. You know, this is where I get to complain and not complain at the same time that Boulevard isn't locally owned anymore. Because, you know, the downside is that I have to be, you know, have a little trepidation about what's going to happen next. But the good side is that these great beers that I've been enjoying and telling my friends about, you know, are becoming more and more available because they've got some big money behind them that can afford to ramp up production and do the kind of distribution that lands Tank 7, you know, in Orlando from the middle of the country.
Now, was it InBev?
It's not InBev. It's not InBev. They were purchased by. I'll find it now. Now you're making me think about it.
Okay, I just wondered because I know InBev's pretty good at being hands off, except for stupid Super Bowl commercials making fun of themselves.
Let's see.
Ta-da. David, did you see what Patrick was drinking tonight?
Yeah, I sent out a text to all of my beer nerd buddies in the local area to keep an eye out and to buy several bottles.
Of that?
Yeah. I'm a big Omegang fan to begin with. And
what is that one?
The Game of Thrones one?
Yeah.
They do it every year.
What is it?
I don't know. Style. I haven't looked.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I'm guessing it's a stout if they went with crow. I'll look right now. Did you figure it out, Aaron?
No. You know, it's interesting. They don't mention it explicitly on their website at all. It's kind of interesting to me. They've avoided talking about it being bought out. Like, they have a whole page about their story. Mm-hmm. And when you read our story, it doesn't include, you know, the fact that we got bought by somebody else.
Yeah, I think
they just leave that part.
I think a lot of those guys, yeah, they don't want to talk about that because they're small name.
It was Mortgot. They're the same people that own Unibrew.
Yeah. There you go.
Yes, and it is a Saison. Aaron, if you ever want to find that info, go to Raid Beer and search for the brewery.
Oh, okay.
It always it says
I was on Boulevard's site already, so that's why I was peeking around there. But you know, the I guess what I was getting to is that, you know, in general, good microbrews, the reality is that they're getting bought up, and there's good and bad of that. The ones that are being handled well, you know, what it's mostly meaning is that they're being distributed more broadly, and you can find them places that you couldn't, you know, just a few months ago. And I think that what's happening with Boulevard is a good example of that.
Right. Well, it's happening all over because, yeah, I mean, Goose Island with the two Chicago folk here. Goose Island's a good example because either of you, tell me if I'm wrong, but Goose Island got bought by InBev, and InBev is like minus distribution. 100% hands off. They might do some production of their more standard stuff, but I think if you go to the brew pub, it's still the same, right?
That was my understanding. That was kind of the deal with it. Is they were supposed to, you know, let them do their own thing.
Yeah, I don't know, but three.
I don't know for sure, but I know what that's what I read about the when I saw the sale. It was like at first it was like, oh come on, you know, the big conglomerate's going to buy these guys up, and it's just going to make it, you know, Budweiser again or something, you know. But
all right, Dave, we're wandering afield again, but I have to mention this. This is the one I may have to try and find to stash in my luggage to share with you at Walt Disney World this summer if I can get my hands on it, because I just found that the most recent, you know, Boulevard is kind of famous for doing its smokestack series, these limited run beers. Mm-hmm. The one that they just announced just this last week is an Aztec chocolate stout.
Yes.
That they're brewing an imperial stout infused with pasilla negro, ancho chilies, and cacao nibs.
Yes, please.
that they brew to an 11% ABV.
That's killer.
Okay, but you're not going to have too many of those.
Well, no, and they only come in the big bottle. They say they're aiming for a June release date, so we'll see if they get it out in time for me to bring with me.
Nice. I hope so. If not, there's a thing called PayPal and shipping.
Okay, we're not going to talk about bootlegging in the podcast that's going to air here. You know, here's the important thing. We've actually sat here and enjoyed, you know, three different beers, two kind of similar, one very different. I think we've reached the point in the show where we do need to go around and do our ratings that we usually do, you know, rank them 1 to 3, which one is your favorite, which is your least favorite. So, Don, I'm going to let you lead us off and let us know what your favorite was and rank them down from 1 to 3.
Two-Hearted, number one. Enjoyed it a great deal. That was, you know, the first time I've had an IP like that, you know, I really enjoyed that. Then I would say the Hoo Garden. Very light, you know, nice, refreshing beer. And I can't say the other name. I'll just call it the Hefeweizen.
There you go.
Okay. Go for it. Fair enough.
So that's me.
All right. And David, how about you?
I, Two Hearted's out because it's number one no matter what. I'm a big Heffy fan before. I'm a Whitbeer guy. So I'm going to go with the Hefeweizen overall as long as it's fresh. And then and then to the Whitbeer. Not that – nothing against Hoegaarden. Both of these, you know, they're more – I hate to use the term pedestrian because they're not pedestrian styles. But they're more more standard styles. And the 1-3 comparison here, at least for me, isn't really – a 1-3. It's I like IPAs more than anything in the world. No matter what, in the summer, I'm going to drink an IPA over anything.
Sure.
So for the other two, big Hefeweizen fan. Always have been. If you're ever thinking about getting into home brewing, it is the number one style to start with. Everyone will tell you pale ale. Everyone will tell you brown ale. Everyone will tell you amber ale. None of those compare to the fact that if you get the correct yeast and make a Hefeweizen, if you brew it at home, you are, from brew to bottle, 5 days because the yeast goes so fast.
All right. And it's best drunk, you know, fresh anyway. So, yeah. You know, that's where you can really leverage the fact that you did the home brewing.
Yeah. I mean, you can go 5 days to the bottle and then probably 10 more days. So you could theoretically be drinking your own beer in 15 to 19 days. So big fan. But I like that. And then the Hoegaarden is going to be three for me.
All right. Well, you know, for me, I'm really enjoying this Boulevard Single White IPA. I mean, it's a local to me, and I have not really I've seen it around a lot and never really reached for it. There's another IPA that Boulevard does, and I'll have to look for the name of it, but I've had it before. I didn't love it, so I didn't even think to grab the Single White, and the Single White is terrific. So that would be number one on my list. I just like the fuller flavor. The second for me, I think, would be the Hefeweizen again, the Widmer in my case. And I think I just liked it because I got a lot of the similar flavors that I got from the Hoegaarden without as much of the funky nose of it that kind of bugged me from the Hoegaarden. The flavor of the Hoegaarden was frankly quite good. And I think Don is the one who's mentioned a couple of times that it you know, it's got the kind of characteristics of a good, relaxing summer beer. But now I really do understand why you serve it with an orange in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that scent would really cut through and, you know, would probably allow me to enjoy the flavors in ways that I don't as much because I'm trying to avoid smelling it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, Justin, our big flavor man, you're up last.
Okay. Amongst this group, I don't even know if it's a real fair comparison, but the Two Hearted Ale is number one for me. And then when we get to the wheat beers, which I am actually a big fan of, I drink a lot of different wheat beers. Whenever I see a new one, I'll give it a try. More often, I'll just try the American wheats, and they probably are. I probably like them better because they're fresher than what we're getting imported. But if I had to choose between the Weihenstephaner and the Hoegaarden, I'd pick the German version over the Belgian version. But either would be acceptable and take up space in my refrigerator.
Well, hey, just as a note, American wheats are a completely different animal. Well, depending, because if you're talking about an American made Hefeweizen, then that's cool. Like that's I get it, but like actual American wheats, like Gumball Head, it's completely different. You're throwing a whole new yeast factor into it. Because okay. I know you're talking about Gumball Head, right? I'm assuming.
Not specifically, no.
Okay. Are you an Oberon fan? I forget
yes.
this.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
See, I'm a Gumball Head fan, but otherwise American wheats to me, I'm not a big big fan. I'm not splitting hairs here. I apologize. I'm not trying to.
No, I understand what you're saying.
But yeah, you're crossing the streams when Ray said not to.
I like gear.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's what it really comes down to. It's like, yes. Oh wait, it's in a glass, and it's malted.
All right.
It's
well,
not
you know,
Budweiser or Busch.
You know, you've heard what we think of these beers. We'd love to hear what you think. Try them yourself. You know, let us know what you think of them, and let us know if there are particular beers that you'd like to see us or hear us taste. We've been, you know, focusing on beers that we can find at Walt Disney World or beers that we know because we can find them locally easily. But as we've been saying, you know, with distribution getting better of microbrews, maybe there's something local to you that has gone to wider distribution recently that you'd like to hear our thoughts on. Let us know about it. You can email us at podcast@dizdads.com. Visit our blog, dizdads.com. Tweet us at DizDads Podcast on Twitter, and participate in the discussions in our forums at boards.dizdads.com. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/DizDadsPodcast. Until next time, I've been Aaron Rittmaster, drinking beer with David Jewart.
Have a good evening, everyone.
Justin West.
Good night, folks.
And Don Donfris.
Night, all.
Brought to you by Fairy Tale Journeys, an authorized Disney travel planner. Let us help you put together your next magical Disney vacation. Find us at fairytalejourneys.com. Let us sweat the details so you don't have to.